Hey, Sharnold.
Yeah, Zach.
I have a question. My favorite color is blue, and I really like to marvel at things. Is there any character that could help me with that? Is there any character who's like a, like a blue marvel? Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Doombots Marvel Podcast. We're the Doombots. I'm Zach.
And I'm Sharnold.
And today, on our Marvel podcast, we're going to be talking about a character with the word Marvel in his name.
Yeah, how about that?
It's cool. There's surprisingly few comic book characters that are named after the companies that they appear in the comics of. Like, you don't get any, like, I'm DC Man. You
well,
don't
see that a I lot. Mean,
Batman. Like, I'm Valiant Knight.
Is
or I'm
Detective the Comic Man?
Dark Horse of Death. Like, these characters just...
Boom! I'm a superhero!
I guess DC is Detective Comics, so he's the world's greatest detective.
Image.
Image is a really good name for a character, by the way.
Yeah. It just looks like different things, depending on how you look at him.
Yeah.
Yeah, or her.
Yeah.
Or her. Wildstorm. That's a good
Wildstorm
superhero
Wildstorm is also
name
a great
too.
Superhero name.
Yeah. Action Lab. I'm just trying to
I mean,
think
that could
of,
be
of
that could
publishers.
Be Action Lab could be Wildstorm's like base.
Mm-hmm.
They could do like a mixed crossover universe, but all the characters are just the names of the superhero or the comic book companies. And then DC's in the corner playing by themselves, being gritty and moody.
So what did that have to do with anything?
I don't have any idea. I'm all out of Adderall.
What do we normally do on the Doombots Marvel podcast?
Normally on the Doombots Marvel podcast, what we like to do is we like to discuss, dissect, break down, suck
spoil.
All of the joy in life out, or spoil, devastate, decimate, just make you really
eradicate
comic book plot lines and stories.
Adjudicate,
I guess so. I mean, that's not really a... It feels like you're just...
Resonate.
Well, now you're just rhyming things. But, okay.
It's a StarCraft reference.
Oh, okay. What?
Well, because the Dark Templars?
No.
They always go...
No, we're not... Look. Look.
Is it too, is it too early to tangent?
It's not just that it's a tangent. It's about a tangent and a whole other property that I just can't deal with right now. I don't need about the Zergs. And the pylons? Is that a thing?
Yeah, pylons are a thing.
Okay.
I need more of them.
I played a game. I played the first StarCraft when I was young.
I require additional pylons!
That quote means nothing and a lot at the same time. It's weird how memory works. But we're not talking about any of that today.
Oh, no. I'm confused. I might be doing the wrong podcast.
What we're talking about today is Blue Marvel.
Oh, I like him.
Okay, I know... next to nothing about Blue Marvel.
Uh-huh.
I do know that he gives all the other cards plus one power.
Yes.
And I just got him as a card. I do not use him in my deck, though, but I know very little about Blue Marvel. I know he's a black superhero.
He's a living antimatter reactor. Does that help?
What the fuck? Does that help? I don't know how to answer that question. I don't know how to address that fact. The only thing I know about Blue Marvel was he is... a black superhero,
right?
Which is not super common as much.
Unfortunately, that's a correct fact about the world.
And canonically within the world of the Marvel Universe, he is the first black superhero.
Correct.
I know we've had this conversation. I don't want to make it a whole thing. In reality, like in our universe, meta-contextually in real Earth.
Right.
Black Panther was the first black superhero, right?
Okay. He premiered, I want to say, in 65, 1965.
Jack Kirby and everything,
yeah,
right?
Jack Kirby and Stan Lee.
But canonically, in the context of Marvel,
right,
it was Blue Marvel,
right,
because of sliding time, you
right,
said.
Right. Okay. So the basic idea of sliding time is that even though most of the Marvel characters premiered in the 60s, they are not currently 60 years old. They're only approximately 14 years older than they were when they premiered. Approximately 1 year goes by for every 7 years of real time.
So it's dog years.
Yes.
It's like reverse dog years. But it's opposite dog years.
It's opposite dog years. But then if they had premiered in the 60s, that would mean that currently the Marvel Universe is taking place in 1975, right? Because that's 14 years later, right?
But I think Sliding Time is...
Sliding Time works backwards from that, okay? Yeah. So Sliding Time means the Marvel Universe is taking place now and their origins were only 14 years ago, okay?
Yeah.
Which means that Black Panther... wasn't a superhero until what, 2009 or 1999? Which way? Yeah, 2009 was 14 years ago.
Yeah.
Wow. That's crazy.
1999 was
was more than 10 years ago.
Yeah. Somebody said, oh, what was it? It was like, oh, this came out 40 years ago in 1982. And I was like, oh, you shut the fuck up. But yeah, 40 years ago. Yeah. It was not the 60s as I keep thinking it was.
Yeah. I grew up when the 60s were 40 years ago. So that's how long ago they that's were forever.
Weird.
Like Sliding Time. The like, 60s like were emotional, always 40
emotional
years
Sliding Time.
So anyways, in 2008, Kevin, and I have no idea how you pronounce his last name, Grivoux?
Grivoux?
It's probably Grivoux. That would make sense. Cause
if it's French,
of French,
definitely don't pronounce the X.
Okay, yeah. So he wrote Underworld is what he's probably most famous for. He's also famous for having the deepest, sexiest voice of all human beings.
Is he now?
Yes, even sexier than that. His natural talking voice is deeper than your attempting to do a deep voice.
Fine.
And he's a writer, and in 2008 he created this character called Blue Marvel, who was a black superhero in the 60s of Marvel time, right? So if Black Panther, T'Challa, wasn't around until the mid-2000s,
yeah,
then Blue Marvel, or Dr. Adam Brashear, who was a superhero in the 60s, that was before that.
Now, I have a question. Well, two questions. When is Luke Cage's canonical origin now, then? Because you're telling me he was wearing that metal tiara thing, not in the open neck shirt in the late 20-teens?
Yeah. And he talks about that, actually, in some of the comics that I read that Blue Marvel is in. He's talking to White Tiger about the difference between fashion and style.
No.
And he owns it. He's Here's like, hell yeah, I was wearing that in the 20,000s.
Before we get to Adam Brashear, I would like to just say that, I can't believe this is the second time I'm having to say this, racism is always bad.
Okay. Good. Good stance.
Now,
there
were times in the past.
Mm-hmm.
You see, I'm just saying Sliding Time brings things that were acceptable in the 70s into the late 2010s, when the stuff definitely shouldn't have been seen by anyone as acceptable.
Yeah. Sliding Time causes a lot of problems.
Right, so maybe they just
don't
need it.
What are you going to do? You're going to make the characters all be 60 years old?
No. Like, you just make them perpetually the same age.
Well, but then how do you explain that?
You don't need to explain it. They don't explain it on any animated show. You can just tell a story. And you don't have to worry about so fucking much about whether or not it makes sense.
Most of the time they do.
Because Sliding Time doesn't make it make more sense. It just makes it make no sense in a different way. Let's backtrack. Let's go back to Blue Marvel.
Okay.
So, Dr. Adam Brashear.
Yes.
Which
okay.
sounds like an Indian name, actually, a last name.
It does. Yeah, I think... it is, maybe.
Is he part Indian, possibly?
I don't know who his parents are. He was born in the 20s.
Wait, he was born in the 20s?
Wait, no, he was born in the 30s. Yeah, he's old.
Oh, okay.
But he's a living antimatter reactor. So,
okay, you keep saying that part.
Okay, so he was in Korea. He was in the Korean War. And he got a Medal of Honor for saving his best friend, Connor Sims. And that was 1951. And he was 20-ish. And so he would have been born around 1930.
Okay.
So then he gets back from the war and he starts doing science, like you do. And he discovers a place called the Neutral Zone.
Okay.
Okay, so you know how Reed Richards discovered a place called the Negative Zone?
Uh-huh.
And how it's made of antimatter.
Sure.
So it's the Negative Zone and the real world is the Positive Zone. And Brashear discovered a place called the Neutral Zone, where matter and antimatter live in harmony.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and so then he was trying to harness the energy of the neutral zone, and then there was accidentally an explosion.
Okay.
And so he and Connor Sims both got infused with antimatter.
And Connor Sims was the person he saved?
He saved, like his best friend.
You got it.
Okay. Dr. Bashir got superpowers and became a superhero.
Mm-hmm.
And Connor got superpowers and kind of went crazy and insane.
Okay.
And he got really mad at racists because so Connor Sims was a white guy whose best friend was Dr. Bashir, who had saved him in the war. And he got really fed up with racists and was like, I'm going to murder everyone.
Everyone who's racist?
No. Just all people. Because the antimatter also made him a little crazy.
Okay. I mean, I guess that solves the problem in a real utilitarian roundabout way.
Yeah.
And if there's no one to be racist against.
There's no racism.
Okay.
And so Dr. Bashir stopped him, right? And in the process of doing that, his mask got all ripped up and people discovered that he's black. And so the comic book that came out in 2008 called Blue Marvel, The Legend of Dr. Bashir, I think, something like that, is a really, really good examination of the racism of the 60s and the different perspectives that people had about what may or may not be good. Basically, JFK, worried about race riots, asks Blue Marvel to step down. He's worried that either white people will revolt because there is a black superhero, but also that if white people revolt because of a black superhero, that black people will fight back, and that then Dr. Bashir would have to take sides. And at this point in time, you've basically got the Superman problem, right? Because he's like the only superpowered individual right now, because Captain America's in ice and the modern superhero era hasn't started yet. And he's also a living antimatter reactor. So he's he's one of the most powerful characters in Marvel.
But I don't understand. What powers does that confer upon him?
So besides not aging and being able to fly and breathe in space, or just not breathe. He doesn't have to breathe. He doesn't have to eat either. He has all of the energy. And so he's super strong and can laser you, but he also can manipulate other forms of energy, and he can survive outside of space-time.
That's a lot of things.
Yeah, he's super powerful. So basically, he agrees to step down, and the whole series is now in the modern age of heroes.
How, there's this idea of, like, a white overconfidence, like the confidence of a straight white man who thinks that he can't ever be wrong about anything. How much of that do you have to be to be a president and say to a person who could...
To the most powerful person.
To the most powerful human on the planet. Like, hey, step down from me. Do me this favor. Because he could turn around and go, how about I enslave everyone? Or I capture the planet? Or how about I just kill you and become president?
Yeah.
Or how about I just leave forever? Or what if I go to Russia?
That's
like, he could, like, any of those
stuff
things
that they were worried about.
Yeah, yeah, like, I guess you're just basing your hope off of this guy you have not treated very well, really wanting to be a good American.
And agreeing with your opinion of what is best for the world.
Yeah.
Right?
See, that's the problem with any, like, super-powered entity. Like, I'm not saying that kill everyone the other way around, but the fact that that was a possibility...
Uh-huh.
And he could have, because was Connor Sims as basically as strong as him?
Yeah.
Until he got defeated, I
right.
guess? Like, the fact that that was a viable option
is terrifying?
Yeah, but terrifying in a way where, like, you kind of get him to weigh in first before you ask for any favors, I feel.
And that's sort of what the series is about. So in the modern era, the age of superheroes, Connor Sims, the anti-man, he shows back up and he just obliterates the Avengers. And this is the version of the Avengers that has the Sentry on it.
Who's their Superman?
The most overpowerful character in the world. Who, so I think last time when we were doing the Marvel Snap, I said he has the power of a billion exploding suns.
Mm-hmm.
It's only a million. He has the power of a million exploding suns.
Well,
so really not that strong when you think about it.
How weak. I still don't understand what that means. I still think that's just nonsense terms.
The same way that being a living antimatter reactor is a nonsense
yeah,
term?
Yeah, that's a nonsense term, but also, like, there's a mystique to that.
Uh-huh.
Just, I have the power of a billion...
A million.
Exploding suns.
Exploding suns, yeah.
But, like, that's just... That unit of measurement, very confusing. Like, I have the speed of 91 million fast pigs. You're like, well, wait. Is that, I don't understand. Wait, is it the collect, like, don't they all run about the same speed? How's that conferred to speed? How's that?
It's fast. You get the idea.
I get the idea that having the power of a million exploding suns, like, but it makes it seem like he can shoot that out as a laser at you.
He can, yeah. He constantly has to not go all out, or he would just accidentally fart the world into an explosion.
So then how does he get his ass handed to him by...
By Anti-Man?
Yeah.
Because antimatter is stronger than regular matter. In the regular universe, in our universe, antimatter is really strong.
I keep forgetting that we're not talking about real antimatter. We're just talking about nonsense magic particles. So
Yeah, that's a good way to say it.
I keep forgetting that. I keep forgetting when you say antimatter, you mean nothing. You mean whatever needs to fill this section of words.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's from the neutral zone.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Which,
not to be confused with the Star Trek neutral zone.
Oh, I was confused. I did think, oh, that's from Star Trek. That's that other property that is unrelated to Marvel. I am very confused.
Star Trek very famously has a neutral zone, which is the area between the Federation and Romulan space.
But that's just like a neutral zone. That's like a DMZ.
Right, yes.
Yeah, there's lots of famous neutral zones on the planet Earth.
Oh, yeah, those two. It's not like those either.
No, like a neutral zone is a term that you use between two warring factions that have a temporary peace.
Right, so this isn't like that.
Like Switzerland.
Yeah.
Does antimatter and matter live harmoniously in Switzerland?
I bet they do.
Also, what does that even mean? Okay, we don't have time for this.
So one thing that I want to make
words.
About
it means words. Zone. Ultimately, it just means words go here.
Yeah. So
sorry, I just had a big realization.
Yeah.
Do you know the Stanislav, the Kuliyashev effect? It's this thing in filmmaking where they show like a blank expression and then a bowl of soup and then the blank expression again and that person looks hungry.
Right.
Because you've sort of projected your opinion onto this blank space. Yeah. I feel a lot of science in Marvel is that. Like, here are words. You generally know what we're trying to say.
Uh-huh.
So just project that general understanding of what we're trying to say onto these science-y words and then that's what those mean now.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
That's perfect.
Cool.
Yeah. So the negative zone is another dimension that exists inside of reality. In the Marvel universe,
mm-hmm.
right?
Okay. The negative zone.
The negative zone is.
Okay.
The neutral zone is outside of reality. So
even the word outside takes on a nebulous sort of...
It does. And so Dr. Brashear does a lot of exploring outside of reality. And so these are going to become some important things. Well, okay, let me finish his origin story and then we'll get into it. So Connor Sims, the Anti-Man, comes back in the modern superhero era, kicks all the Avengers' asses, and they're like, what are we going to do? And Connor's like, your only hope is the Blue Marvel. And
what? Okay.
And
why would he volunteer that?
Because he wants Adam back. They're friends.
Oh, okay.
And so there's this whole thing about like, oh, who is that? And Iron Man has to explore. This was when Iron Man was the head of S.H.I.E.L.D. also. So he's like looking into all sorts of classified files and stuff and finding out who he is and going.
Was Blue Marvel not public knowledge at the time?
So they faked his death and I guess he disappeared into obscurity. I agree that the idea of forgetting about that is insane. Like, I get that they covered it up, but like...
But like, it'd be like forgetting about Captain America.
Right.
Even like when he was in ice. Like, you wouldn't forget him.
Yeah. Even Dum-Dum Dugan.
mm-hmm.
I forget that some people don't know who people are.
Sharnold, that was the most you sentence that I've ever heard in my entire life. Sometimes I forget that people don't know who people are.
So Dum-Dum Dugan.
I forget that sometimes people have different knowledge in their head than I have. No, I just naturally assumed that all people had the knowledge that I have because I have the correct knowledge.
It's that some people don't know things that to me are extremely commonplace. Okay, so like in this day and age, you can talk about Iron Man just like you can talk about Batman, right? He's a character everybody knows. You used to couldn't do that, right? Used to be you said Iron Man to most people, and some of them might know who that was.
Yeah.
In my world that I inhabit, everyone knows who Dum Dum Dugan is because he is...
Is he one of the soldiers that fought with Captain America?
In the Captain America movie, he is, yes. But okay. He's very famously Nick Fury's #2 at
in
S.H.I.E.L.D.
In the Howling Commandos?
In the Howling Commandos, yes.
How fucking proud of you, are you for that?
I'm proud of you for that.
Howling Commandos.
And he's got the biggest red handlebar mustache of all human beings
okay,
ever.
Okay, I know that character from Captain America, First Avenger. Right. Yeah, yeah.
So he has been Nick Fury's #2 at S.H.I.E.L.D. since 1965, right? He is a backup character in
2004.
Every comic,
yeah.
Right? And so when I just talk about Dum Dum Dugan, it's like these days he's like Maria Hill, right? Like these days people know Maria Hill.
Vaguely.
But people know that the girl from How I Met Your Mother was in the Avengers.
Was
a S.H.I.E.L.D. agent. Yes. So anyways, Dum Dum Dugan, who was the original Nick Fury's #2 for a long ass time, says, you know, the 40s had Captain America, the 50s had Marvel Boy, and the 60s had Blue Marvel. Marvel Boy's the Uranian. We've talked about him.
Yes.
He's from Uranus.
Was he the one who stopped insurance scammers?
Yes. Yes, he is.
So fucking stupid. God damn it. I hated that so fucking much. I still hate it. Immediately hate it with a burning passion. How much I hate that.
And so my point is that...
And the fact that he caught one because he was scamming insurance. Fuck all of that. Sorry.
Go back and listen to our 50 C-list characters episode.
Is that even what it was from?
That's what it's from, yeah.
Fucking Uranium Boy. Okay, sorry. Anyway...
So my point is, yeah,
like they would have remembered
people
him.
Would at least know, oh yeah, that guy from the 60s, that super extremely
at the very
famous.
Least, they would tell Ant-Man, ooh,
he died. Yeah.
But then also, how do you fake the death of somebody who can't die?
There was an alien invasion.
Of course. Fucking of course there was.
But the point is, he comes back and you get all of these different perspectives about whether or not what he did, agreeing to step down, was the right thing. Could he have been a black role model? Should he have used his power to prevent all racism? You know, he was obeying an order from JFK. You know, you get good debate about whether or not that was good and what was the state of the world in the 60s and that sort of thing. So Dr. Bashir comes back and he stops Anti-Man by discorporating him into the neutral zone.
So is he actually dead or is he just in the neutral zone?
Well, we think that he's dead until later we find out he's not.
Because of course he's not.
Right.
Because it's comics.
Right, exactly. And anyway, that miniseries is really good and people should read it because I think it does a good job of looking at racism from a lot of different perspectives. So that's that. Okay. And now let's move on to the weird shit.
Okay.
Because like I said, the living antimatter reactor that is the Blue Marvel likes to explore the unknown. He says, we start at the impossible, and then we go from there. So, the universe, the physical embodiment of the universe is known as eternity. Mm-hmm. We know this. This is known.
I still don't know what that means, but that's fine.
And everybody who exists in the Marvel Universe exists inside of eternity.
Sure.
Except when they go outside of eternity so that they can talk to eternity. Right? And so most famously in the Infinity Gauntlet, but since then other times as well, we've seen this place called the White Hot Room, which is where there is no background. It's just whiteness and the cosmic entities talk to each other. Right, so there's Eternity, there's the Living Tribunal, who we've also talked about. He's the Arbiter of Justice, and yep. He's a big gold guy with three heads.
Mm-hmm.
The aspects sometimes come out there. So Death is the one that is most known, I think, by people. We've certainly talked about her the most.
The vague concepts as people characters.
Yes, they're called the Abstracts. And so Chaos and Order are two really big ones that like to hang out in the White Hot Zone and have conversations with people. Galactus gets to go there as well. And then in stories here and there, people like Thanos or Adam Warlock will also go to the White Hot Room and talk to people. And Dr. Bashir, he keeps doing this very reasonable thing, which is like, okay, but like, what's past that, right? Mm-hmm. And so like the Beyonders, right, they exist outside of the multiverse. So then there are also other versions of the multiverse, right? Mm-hmm. So there's like, there's the regular Marvel universe, and then there's the universe where everyone's a monkey.
Right.
And there's the universe, there's like, you know, Cable's future is a different universe, and 1602 is a pretty famous different universe where they're all characters from the 1600s.
Great coincidence.
Anyway, each of those alternate universes have their own version of eternity.
Okay.
And then there is a super eternity who is the combination of all of those eternities. Okay, and so he's the multiverse.
Okay.
And so then the question becomes, what is outside the multiverse? Okay, and this is where Dr. Bashir coins the term omniverse, which I don't like because omniverse usually refers to more fictional universes, like the DC universe or whatever. There are other fictional universes too, right, besides Marvel and DC. StarCraft or Star Trek.
Yeah.
But for Dr. Bashir, the omniverse is what is outside the multiverse, okay? So one of those things is the White Hot Room. One of those things is wherever the fuck the Beyonders live. Mm-hmm. The Beyonders are the people who destroyed everything back when Dr. Doom became God.
Is that different than the Beyonder?
The Beyonder is one of the Beyonders. Yeah, so the Beyonder is famously a child Beyonder who comes into our universe and fucks around with shit because he's like...
a kid.
Yeah.
With an anthill.
And what are people? Okay. What is good and evil?
How does the one above all fit into all this?
We'll get there.
Oh, okay.
And so then another place that is outside the multiverse is the neutral zone. So that just gives you an idea of...
But the negative zone is not?
The negative zone is inside the multiverse. The negative zone is kind of like Asgard. It's just another dimension.
So are there multiple negative zones?
Yeah. Okay. Every multiverse would have its own negative zone, just like every multiverse has its own Asgard. Asgard.
Okay.
Yeah.
But there's only one neutral zone.
Correct.
Okay.
Which exists outside of all of time and space, which is... it's hard for me to even conceptualize what that means.
Oh, it's not hard for me. Why?
Mumbo jumbo?
No.
And this is the thing that Dr. Bashir keeps coming back to, which is true. If you exist outside of time and space, that is just another more different time and space location that you can't get to by walking.
Yeah.
But that's still, it still is something.
Yeah. Well, no one's saying it's not anything. They're just saying, when you say beyond the time and space, you're saying beyond the time and space that all things you know exist. Like, I imagine all of the universes, Marvel and all of them, right?
Right.
Imagine it like a big pile of cords on this table.
Okay.
Right? And then you and I aren't part of that pile of cords.
Right.
So you and I are outside of time and space.
But we're not. It's just that time and... it's that our conception of what is, quote, all of time and space is limited, right? To any entity whose knowledge of time and space is limited to that pile of cords.
Yeah.
Yes, we're outside of that. But then what are we in? Not time and space?
Like some other bigger universe.
That doesn't have time or space?
Sure. I mean, that's assuming that time even exists in the first place.
But it has to. Like, in order for something to happen, there has to be time.
Why? In order for us to understand...
think about a picture, right? Nothing is happening on that picture. But because... the picture is frozen in time, right? But for anything to ever then ever be any different than that picture, something has to happen. And for something to happen, there has to be time.
Unless it already happened.
But then that's also time. If it happened in the past, that's still time.
I guess you're saying...
If you ever have two different things, you have time. Right? In order for there to be change, there has to be time.
Okay.
So you can't talk outside of time. You can talk outside of multiverse and talk outside of the time in the multiverse, right? Like you freeze multiversal time and go over here and have a conversation instead. But you're still in time.
Well, so if you freeze time, right?
Right.
And you're moving.
Right. You're still time.
So you didn't freeze time?
You froze the relative time of everything but you.
Okay, so maybe that's what outside of time is. Maybe outside of time is just...
It's like the... I don't know. It's my difficulty is that they are using absolute terms to refer to a limited number of things.
Sure, but you don't have any problem with them using antimatter to mean whatever the fuck they want it to mean? Like, this is another example of you picking weird individual things to be mad about where there's 50 other examples of the exact same thing that don't bother you at all.
I guess it's because I don't have a good conception of antimatter. I have no problem with them saying antimatter does this, that. That's sort of a suspension of disbelief thing.
But it's impossible for you to have a suspension of disbelief about their concepts of time being used in broad general terms. Also, there's a lot of people who think that maybe time isn't linear in the way that we perceive it. And that's how synchronicity happens.
Sure. I mean, time could be all kinds of weird, fucked up shit. But if you're talking, you can't be outside time.
Okay, but
some sort of time must exist within and around you in order to hold a conversation. And so I guess I need them to be more specific.
Why? Why can't you just accept it as maybe they're using broad general terms instead of hyper-specific terms to just convey a general sense of awe and an inability to conceive of something?
Here's why it bothers me. It doesn't bother me that the writers of the Marvel comics are doing it. It bothers me that entities like Uatu and Eternity and Galactus, who should be better informed about the nature of the time outside of time, are still using the sort of limited terminology that we humans might use.
Listeners, it was at this point that Zach realized that Sharnold thinks those characters are not written by people and are in fact living beings with a knowledge greater than the creators of them.
Okay, like a dumb person who's a good author can still write a smart character, right? Like a good author can write a character who is smarter than and knows more things than they do.
Sure.
Right? And so a good writer should be able to write the cosmic entities in a way where they don't express themselves in the limited way that we humans do.
Right, but then how would you read that?
I don't know, but they should work on it.
But if a human cannot understand it, correct, then a human writer who wrote the character could not write it. But more than that is you could not understand it. And as it is, you can't understand it. So maybe the way they are writing it is conceptually correct because you cannot conceive of the way it's being explained.
It's kind of like Cthulhu. If anyone was doing it right, they would be insane.
Yeah.
That's all I'm asking for from my comics.
To make you go insane? Well, guess what? It seems like it has succeeded. Because you seem fucking crazy.
I only seem fucking crazy, though. In actuality, I am enlightened. Okay. That's how Connor Sims felt when he was going to kill everybody. And yeah. Adam was like, no, the antimatter is making you go crazy. And he's like, no, I've seen clear for the first time. It's a pretty common trope.
Well, for the sake of my sanity, yeah. Let's move on from this.
Okay. So
he exists in the time outside of space, right, in the space outside of space,
right,
we will, we'll just, okay, won't mention time.
Okay, I guess that's fine. But how do you have space outside? It's just different space.
Yeah.
It's other space.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. For the sake of moving on with our lives.
I mean, I just think that your,
will accept that.
I think your interpretations of the words space and time are both too broad and too narrow at the same time, somehow.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Okay, so what happens next?
Yeah. So he stops Anti-Man.
So he stops Anti-Man.
And comes back as Blue Marvel?
Yeah.
And reintroduces himself to the world?
Yeah. And okay, now he's just a hero in the world.
Got it.
And so then Al Ewing, who is a crazy genius.
Yeah.
A lot of this is coming from Al Ewing. Okay, so
You seem trepidatious about it.
No, it's just that it hurts my head to try to think about some of this stuff, as you well know.
Okay.
But Al Ewing is the one who numbered the universes. And so is Dr. Really? Brashear.
Oh. Yeah.
So you know how we live in the eighth universe? Or we live.
Oh.
So.
Okay, yeah.
So the universe that exists after Dr. Doom was God is the eighth iteration of the universe.
Yes.
And thus the Marvel universe before that, up until 2015, was the seventh universe.
Sure.
And so Galactus is from the sixth universe. Okay.
And his mom.
His mom as well, yes. And Al Ewing is the one who gave those universes numbers. And he did
it. He's not the one who numbered like 616. And
no.
That was...
No, it was Crazy Beard Man.
Yeah.
Alan Moore.
Yeah, Alan Moore.
Yeah. Yeah, because those are just different multiverses, right?
Right.
Okay, so I'm just going to read what he says here.
This is Brashear numbering the universes?
In a way, okay. I guess. This is Brashear figuring out that they are in the eighth universe.
Okay.
All right, let's start with the impossible and work up. This is Neutronium, or at least it was. This is just a holographic representation. The real thing existed outside normal reality, a superposition of matter and antimatter in total harmony. My current theory is that it was formed as a byproduct of creation itself, a kind of birth call for the multiverse. It was frighteningly powerful. I attempted to harvest it for years, but the atomic structure refused to cohere in normal space. The atoms fell naturally into structures of seven, forming unstable isometric lattices that tore themselves apart at the quantum level. The pure stuff of creation was not compatible with the world we knew. Until now. This is Neutronium as it is now, perfectly comfortable in real space. Note the structure of the crystal. The Neutronium now forms naturally into eight atom groups, perfect cubes. The same substance, but from a different isometric form. 7 to 8. ISO 8.
Mm-hmm. Those were a whole lot of words.
So he discovered ISO 8, which is the magic purple gem in Marvel games that lets you,
yep,
do magic just, purple stuff.
It lets you pay more money to make your characters have slightly different animations.
So anyway, Dr. Brashear discovers ISO 8 and discovers that the stuff of creation means that we must be in the eighth iteration of the universe.
That was Al Ewing who wrote that?
Yeah.
Did they have his family captive? Like, what leverage did they have over him to shoehorn that bullshit in?
So I don't think they said make ISO 8 work. I think Al Ewing did it just because he wanted to.
But, I mean, does it benefit the stories at all? Because it feels like it only benefits Marvel Strike Force.
So they have this super powerful cubometric structure, and they use it to take Galactus, mm-hmm, and put him into his true form, which is not the Devourer, but the Lifebringer.
I remember that storyline.
Yeah, so the whole reason that he was devouring worlds is because he was incomplete, because his incubation between the sixth and seventh universes hadn't finished, and what he was supposed to be, if they gave him enough energy, which they did through the ISO 8, was the Lifebringer, and he was supposed to, like, seed planets with life, okay? But then Chaos and Order got all uppity about that, Order was like, well, this is different and I don't like that. And Chaos was like, plus I liked it when you were a crazy guy that like just went in there and caused all kinds of chaos. So neither of us like this. So what we're going to do is we're going to kill the Living Tribunal and we're going to eat the in-betweener and we're going to become Logos. I love the look on your face right now. And Logos was in league with the First Firmament. Okay.
You're throwing a lot at me here, Sharnold.
And the First Firmament put eternity into chains because...
How?
So what the First Firmament is, it's multiverse number one. And eternity is multiverse number eight. And so outside of everything that is, we go to the land of could be, should be.
It genuinely feels like you have introduced an entirely different comic book like universe to me now. Like nothing. I'm in territory so unfamiliar. It doesn't feel like we're talking about Marvel anymore. It feels like we're talking about some angsty reinterpretation of Greek mythology.
He's building on the cosmic structure beyond the normal cosmos.
Okay, but hold on. Eternity is represented as a being?
Correct, yeah.
So how do we live in eternity?
We all live inside eternity. Just like bacteria or cells.
Okay, so it's just giant
stuff. No, because there is no space outside of eternity. Everything that is considered space is eternity. See, now you're having the trouble with putting your head around
it. I'm having my trouble.
Eternity doesn't have size.
Okay, so that doesn't make any sense.
Eternity is the whole universe.
Okay, so, I'm with you there.
Right.
I'm with you on the idea that eternity is the universe and is a living conscious thing as the universe. Where I'm not with you is how it can be put into chains.
Okay, so outside eternity in the white hot room.
Yes.
Generally, most things are about the same size. So, like,
regardless of what size they are, outside of the white hot room.
Right. So, Galactus and Thanos.
That was where my problem was.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And so, like, Living Tribunal and Galactus and Thanos, who sometimes exist inside eternity.
Yes.
When they go to the white hot room to chat with eternity, they're all about the same size.
So, it's like a pocket dimension waiting room.
Kind of is. Okay. Yeah. Except that all pocket dimensions exist inside of eternity.
Sure. So this is one that's outside of it.
Right.
Okay.
So then beyond the white hot room is the land of should be, could be, which is where we meet the Never Queen. And she is the personification of possibility. And it is in this realm that all eight multiversal eternities still exist.
Wait, hold on. No, hold on.
Holding?
Each new universe has a new eternity.
Correct.
Okay.
Well, but let's say each new multiverse.
Each new multiverse is a new eternity.
Right.
And we are on the eighth multiverse.
Right.
Okay. But the old multiverses, they still exist inside this land of whatever the fuck it's called.
Yes, potentiality.
But the first universe, who is eternity,
right,
is also the First Firmament.
Right.
So that's just a different name for the first of the eternities.
Yeah, they're all a little different.
Okay.
Just like how all people are a little different, all eternities are a little different. Because in a way, in a meta-contextual fictional way, they are kind of just a species of people.
Okay. Okay. Okay.
Okay.
Yep.
And so the First Firmament is upset because when it was just him, he was the only thing that was, and he was cool with that. But then once there started being other things, he didn't like that, and he wants to go back to being the only thing that is. And so he wants to destroy everything else so that he can be the only thing that is. And basically, the other eternities team up to stop him. And that's The Ultimates by Al Ewing.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's real cool, deep lore mythology.
Yeah.
That feels unrelated to the Marvel Universe whatsoever.
Okay, so we're going to tie it back in a way that uses some concepts that we're more familiar with to talk about. Okay, so this was 2016, right? This was right after Doctor Doom had been God. And then last year, Al Ewing wrote a new series called Defenders Beyond, where some different folks went on a journey with Dr. Adam Brashear. So you've got Loki the Seventh, who is the god of stories, and she is the Loki from the seventh eternity that managed to step outside of reality and not die when everything died. So there are two Lokis now. There's regular Loki and there's Loki the Seventh. And then there's also Taia, who is Galactus's mom from the sixth universe. And then there's Dr. Brashear, and then there's America Chavez, who kicks holes in the multiverse and can teleport and is strong. She's the young girl from Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness.
Okay.
And then Tigra, also, who is a tiger lady.
I know Tigra.
Yeah. So these people all come together because when Doctor Strange died, he cast a final spell using a tarot deck to make sure that they could protect eternity from something called the Enigma, which is this existential threat to everything that is. So they go on a progressive journey outside of reality. They go to the White Hot Room. They go to the Beyond place where the Beyonders are from. They go to the Could Be, Should Be. And then they go to the House of Ideas, which is where the One Above All lives.
Marvel Comics headquarters?
Yes. Because the first time we ever saw it, it was represented as an actual house. And funny enough, we talked about that in our first episode. So, you know, you should already be familiar with what we're talking about.
Sharnold, you have introduced 900 new things to me in the last 55 minutes.
Yeah, I'm trying to expand on the cosmos here. Okay, so Dr. Brashear says, it's time to meet God. And then this is what happens. I see through many eyes. I build with many hands. They are themselves, but they are also me. I am all powerful. My only weapon is love. The mystery intrigues me. I am as I am. I will be what I will be. I am the one above all. And then Dr. Brashear says, I'm sorry, but I don't think that's true. And basically, he's like, well, if you're God, what created you, right? If you were the first thing, what came before that and what came before that and what came before that? And he decides that, you know, because they continue to find the next realm outside of everything, right? That just because they can't go beyond the House of Ideas and go beyond the One Above All, just because that's the highest level that they're able to reach, doesn't mean that there isn't anything beyond that. And then the One Above All is like, that's an interesting point. I hadn't thought about that. And then he gives them a vision of this threat that is coming, which is the biggest threat to the Marvel Universe, which is a threat that is coming from somewhere beyond the One Above All. And I want to show you what it looks like and ask you what you think it is.
Okay. Well, that's a raining pile of pink maggots, so that's concerning.
that's part of it, certainly.
And that looks like it's... Oh, fuck you. I will say that if you had to draw climate change, I feel a McDonald's French fry grass and a cloud of lettuce and tomatoes. Not really sure what the crown. I think that's just literally anti-monarchy, that second one.
So this is the One Above All attempting to visualize something outside of itself in a form that they can perceive, and magic tarot cards are involved, and so that's why it's a crown.
That's just pink maggots raining on people, on corpses.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's scary. Climate change?
That's what I think it is. Okay. That's how I interpret this image. Because the greatest threat to the Marvel Universe from outside the Marvel Universe is if our real world gets destroyed.
Yeah. I don't think necessarily it's climate change, though.
It might not be.
No, I think it's... related to climate change. I think it's corporate greed and capitalism.
Uh-huh.
Which, by the way, Marvel Comics taking a swipe at capitalism is a real interesting take.
Yeah. Well, their individual creators and editors, even though they are part of the system, doesn't necessarily mean that they
It was like when the Lego movie was against Lego sets.
Yes. Just because a writer is part of a system doesn't mean that they can't be against that system.
No, for sure. Right? But I'm just saying that it's a I'm saying it's a bold stand to take, and one that feels like maybe they had to represent it like that to be allowed to create
it. See, I don't think that they get that much oversight. Right? Like, I doubt Kevin Feige read this book.
That is so...
Right?
That is so aggressively meta that the biggest threat to the Marvel universe is what happens to our real universe. Is the destruction of our world. I just have such a... That's just kind of staggering. That level of self-referential meta-ness is staggering to me.
So this was all build up to that. My attempts to convey the going outside the universe, beyond what is beyond, is building up to this idea that the one above all. We have to
have this on the page when we do the story. Yeah.
It's a great image. It's from Defenders Beyond number 5.
Defenders Beyond number 5. It's impossible to describe, really, but it's... And then there's also just a spaceship.
Yeah.
Which I'm going to assume is a knock at Jeff Bezos.
Sure.
Fuck, man.
But yeah, it's like, it's super fucking meta. It starts in a way that's like hard to wrap your brain around, and then comes back in a way that makes so much sense that it's like meaningful again, right? Yeah. That like, okay, we understand that the biggest threat to the Marvel multiverse, universe, everything of Marvel is... our world dying, whatever means that may take, whether it be an alien invasion, a fiery crown in the sky, a bunch of purple maggots, or corporate greed, or global warming.
Yeah, I mean, they literally have what's supposed to be a McDonald's M, except they put an extra bump.
Yes. No, I mean it. Yes.
Wow.
And you know, you've got a ruined city there.
Well, it would sort of be like if that whole simulation theory, right?
Uh-huh.
It would be like if we somehow found the avatar for the person who programmed this simulation.
Right.
And the biggest threat to our universe was something that was going to happen to the servers.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. I don't think that we're going to top this in terms of...
No, this was sort of where the episode was leading to.
So the biggest threat to the Marvel universe is... climate change and corporate greed in our real world universe.
Right.
Or Rotten Tomato scores. And people losing interest in Marvel movies. Wow, okay.
And that's how Dr. Brashear figured it out.
Holy shit. I'm stunned. I think we should go out on top of that and maybe unless there's more that you wanted to...
No, that's the end of that. Did you want to do a segment? We haven't done a segment in like 5 years.
Yeah, let's spin the wheel and see what's going on with our segment. Oh, here it's called Doombot's Addendum. Ooh. Although we were going to addend...
Doomdum. Yes.
Doombot's a doomdom. Double it up. No, that's terrible. That makes no sense. That's great. Okay, so we just did a two-part episode on Marvel Snap.
Right, neither of which had a segment because we talked for 17 hours.
About every single card. And I spent most of that time sort of shitting on and complaining about Marvel Snap.
Yeah, as one does.
Yeah. I mean, it's my default is to just complain for the most part.
If you just always agreed with me and liked all of the same things, I don't really think we would have a podcast.
I like that. I did not think that
you didn't
was going to happen. I'm still kind of staggered from that revelation. Because when you first said that the biggest threat to the Marvel Universe was climate change, I was like, no, it's fucking Kree, or it's fucking aliens, or it's fucking demons, or Hex, or Eternals. But all of that is threatened by real world, our universe climate change. Yeah. Fuck, man. Sorry. I doomed him. Here.
He plays it now.
You fucking play Snap now. I started playing it after we did the episode. And I was like, you know what? Charnold loves this game so much. I don't get it at fucking all. I'll give it a try.
Of his own volition. I didn't even suggest this. He texted me a week later and was like,
oh, no.
What has happened to my soul?
And the truth is that I think my biggest hang up was I was, because it's a card game, but on the phone.
But not.
I was imagining it as how you would play it with cards, and it didn't make any sense, the mm-hmm. reveals and all that. That being said, when I actually got my hands on it and gave it the proper time to play, oh man, it's addictive and it's fun. And like,
well, I think one thing that we didn't mention when we were talking about it is that matches only last like 2 to 3 minutes.
Yeah.
And so it's really easy. You get that feeling of, oh, just one more.
Also, it's
forever.
It's easier than I imagined, than I was thinking, to get new cards.
Mm-hmm.
They don't make it so hard to get cards that you can't play.
You are continually getting new cards
and updating and upgrading. There are very big problems with parts of the game.
Yeah, like when they ask you for money. I don't like any of that.
When they ask you for money, yeah, that's not but great.
I'm just a big old commie. So.
Sure, except for we both spent $10,000 on Marvel Strike Force. But right, whatever. But
I learned from that experience.
And that game sucks compared to this game.
Game's not even a game.
That game's not a game. You press play for me. It's just pressing fucking buttons. This game actually includes strategy,
yeah.
Except for the ones where on turn 5 they play your hand for you.
Have you gotten egoed yet?
No.
So that's Krakoa, which is a new one that we didn't talk about because it's brand new.
Oh, okay.
Like, my first time that I experienced Krakoa was last night.
Yeah, so it's that new. I think it might have been yesterday.
But Ego,
yesterday
we talked about
when we recorded this, not when this come out, but yeah.
Ego's the one that does your whole game for you, not
see,
just turn 5.
I don't think I would like that. I think that would really piss me off. But
see, I like it. I think it's fun because it's so fucking weird and like what the hell is happening?
Yeah.
And
as long as it doesn't happen often, that's the thing.
Yeah, because I mean it happens like one every 40 matches or something,
yeah.
And it takes 2 minutes, and then you go to the next one, you know?
There are certain cards that I don't like. I don't like an on-reveal ability happening the next turn. So for Hawkeye, on-reveal, get +2 if you play a card here next turn. Well, then that's not on-reveal. It should be if you play a card here with this card, then you get +2.
And there are also some ongoing abilities that aren't ongoing abilities. Like, no. Wolverine's regeneration,
yeah,
isn't keyworded as an ongoing ability, and that is so that it doesn't interact with other ongoing abilities, right?
Right.
So like, there are some things that cancel ongoing abilities, they don't cancel the regeneration. There are some things that double on reveal abilities.
Odin, who I love.
Right. So he gets to double Hawkeye's thing. That's why they keyworded it as an on-reveal ability, even though
mechanically it's
so different.
But how is that double, though? Because how can, for example, here's one, Jessica Jones.
Right.
On-reveal, get +4 if you don't play any other card to this location next turn.
Right.
Right? Odin is a 6-cost card.
So Odin it doesn't work with, but it does work with Wong. So Wong doubles on reveals already, right? So if you've already played Wong and then you play Jessica Jones and then you don't play another card,
oh, you get double the thing.
+4 twice.
But that's what I'm saying.
Right?
Like,
so it's weird and confusing, and I still don't like it.
If a character doubles an on reveal, it should double the bonus to that on reveal instead of the conditions of its initial application.
Yes.
But anyway, that's nitpicky bullshit. Like, there are great, cards.
There's a lot of stuff like that, though.
I hate the place that shovels five rocks into your deck. I fucking hate that. Your deck is so small.
Yeah.
Because the games are so limited. That it is hard to find a good balance of one cost cards versus higher cost cards.
One thing that I really hate, So I'm so used to Magic, right? Where if you curve out perfectly and your opponent misses a turn, you've got a huge advantage, right? Yeah. Curving out, for those who are not so game inclined, if you play a one drop on turn one, a two drop on turn two, a three drop on turn three. But in Marvel Snap, even if you curve out perfectly, your opponent can easily miss turns one and two, do absolutely nothing on turn one and two, but have a better three or four drop and still win. And I don't like that.
Well, also, no matter how well you plan, you'll suddenly get a thing where you just can't play here. Or
there's a lot of luck involved.
Or the one where it's like everyone gets plus five energy turn one.
Yes.
And suddenly, I mean.
And suddenly, yeah, what you have in your opening hand changes the whole game.
Yeah. I do like Colossus because you can't be destroyed or depowered or forcibly moved.
Mm-hmm.
So that one's fun.
But see, I think that the reason that they have, quote, luck as a such a high component is so that every match feels so different.
And the luck is balanced. Because it doesn't affect one person. It hits
both players, yeah. Right. And so the problem is you can get it where, you know, your opponent just destroys you because you just got totally effed.
Yeah.
But that's why having the matches only last 2 to 3 minutes works well. Because then you're like, well, I got totally effed by RNG. I'm just going to play again and hope that that doesn't happen this time.
Yeah.
Right? So there's a lot going on and not all of it is good.
But enough of it is good that it is very fun. It's very addictive. I like the way it works. There are too many things going on. Not to sound like an 80-year-old who just got their first, you know, cell phone, but like there's like four different types of currency to buy stuff. There's gold, and then there's also boosters, but then each card has its own booster.
Yeah.
And then there's energy, and then there's other things, and then you upgrade cards. I also don't like that the upgrading your card doesn't like make your card more powerful. It just gives it a different image on the front. Shiny or 3D. Or whatever.
And I really wish that, so when you upgrade your card all the way to level infinity, it does what's called splitting, and you get a new version of that card that is even more extra shinier.
Great.
And I hate that.
Yeah.
I wish that they would give you a variant. Right? Like, I know that one of the ways that they make money is by charging $8 billion and having 800 variants for every single card, but there are enough variants that they could, instead of just making it more shiny, they could give you a random variant when you upgrade a card. And that would be like real value.
I mean, real value to a degree, though, because, again, the variant still has the same power. Yeah,
It would be more interesting than just being more shiny.
No, I agree. For sure. And some of them are fun to collect, but like, I really like the gameplay of it. Mm-hmm. So I kind of don't give a shit about the art so much.
See, I play enough that I would like to have wider variety on my art.
Yeah.
But I refuse to give them the type of money that it would cost. Now, if it was only like a dollar, maybe, for a variant, maybe I would buy five for the cards that I play with a lot. But it's like $10 for a single variant. And like, I don't know. But I guess I'm just poor. Maybe that's what's happening.
So ultimately, I really like the game. I think it has a lot of benefits. I would like to point out one thing I have a big problem with.
Mm-hmm.
I want you to tell me what is wrong with that image right there.
Oh, with the opening credits image? Is it because Galactus's head is so fucking weird? Why is he a fucking
Funko Pop vinyl? Everyone else is a normal character, and Galactus is some weird, like, anime chibi fucking pump Funko.
Yeah.
Why? What was the thought process behind that?
I don't know.
Make this make sense for me, Sharnold. I'm not here for it. Not for that. Just that one specific thing. And I like Funko Pop vinyls. I have a bunch.
Well, and if they were
all that
it's
way.
It's because the style is so drastically different in a single image. It suddenly just changes
with Galactus.
Yeah.
No reason.
Yeah.
Motherfuckers.
Yeah.
I'm never playing this game again.
Let's get them.
Let's end this podcast so I can play this game. Okay, well, thank you guys for joining us today. We really appreciate it. If you guys have any questions, I don't know how you possibly could. Everything was very clear. Email us at doombotspod@gmail.com. You can check out the website doombotspod.com, on all social media at doombotspod. And we'll be back in 2 weeks with a new episode.
Yes.
With that weirdly doesn't have anything to do with Marvel Comics.
What? But we're the Doombots Marvel podcast.
We are, but we're doing a reversal this week. And since I don't know a goddamn thing about Marvel Comics, we are going to be talking about the great Joe Hill horror action comic Lock and Key.
Ooh.
And Sharnold is going to
I'm ready to learn.
Learn all about it, because I don't think he's read this property at all.
I have not.
And we're going to figure out which one of the magic keys we like the most. Is it the one that opens your brain up? Is it the one that turns a doorway into a mouth? Sure is. That one's mine. Anyway, come back in 2 weeks and you'll hear about all the other crazy. Is it the one that turns the entire universe into a play and the moon is a stage? Is it the one that makes a giant spider appear in a house with a bigger house? What the is it the fuck one that turns you into a ghost? About?
Okay, I understand how you feel now. Yep. When I talk.
Yeah.
because I'm like, what are these words
Yeah.
It doesn't even sound like a coherent thing.
Is it the one that kills a demon into whispering iron into your chest? Is the one that gives you the power of flight, but not naturally, just through a harness? Is it
the one that makes your head chibi-sized like Galactus?
There is one. Or maybe that was actually a cheat code in GoldenEye and I got them mixed up. Anyway, thank you guys for joining us and we'll be back. This has been the Doombots Marvel Podcast.
And remember, it's time to meet God.
So fucking ominous. It's so aggressive.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
I'm going to take these off because my glasses are squishing my face. And I think that Kevin Griveaux, right? That's how you say it non-condescendingly.
I still haven't seen it.
As a French person.
I still haven't seen it. I don't know that you can say things non-condescendingly in French.
That's a good point, yeah.
Racism is bad, Charles.
That's the official stance, except against the French. French.